From the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. On the cover of the September 1960 issue of Playboy magazine, there was a picture of a lovely redheaded woman with her back turned to the camera. She looked like she was possibly in the shower, but it's hard to tell because the picture is fractured like a jigsaw puzzle with a piece missing, in the shape of a bunny, of course. The woman in the photo was a model named Marley Renfro. Miss Renfro had just completed work on a film in which she was uncredited. Most of Miss Renfro could be seen in this movie except one key feature, her face. She was the body double in the shower scene in Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. Robert Graysmith, who has written about crime in a slew of books, including Autofocus and Zodiac, has written a book, now out in paperback, about the model on the Playboy cover. The book is as fractured as the jigsaw puzzle Playboy cover. Hugh Hefner, Russ Meyer, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Chicago, Charles Manson, Francis Ford Coppola, strippers, dancers, showgirls, murder, and Graysmith himself are all pieces of the puzzle in The Girl in Alfred Hitchcock's Shower. This book is as much a film history and a popular culture chronicle as it is a true crime story, and the author is my guest this week, Robert Graysmith. Welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Well, thank you, Gary. Nice to talk to you. You know, I'm glad you mentioned the missing jigsaw piece, because that's what initially intrigued me in the story.
Yeah, that was what grabbed you.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I write in a very unusual way. First of all, I'm trained as a painter and an illustrator and a cartoonist. And, you know, basically I love film, obviously. And I love history and I love literature. So, you know, they're all sort of meld together in the various books I write. And I started one book 1990, and I just finished it absolutely today, of all things.
Congratulations.
They got the edited copy, and it's going to be from Random House. Broadway Books is going to do it. And, you know, it's nice to have an editor again, because I usually just sort of muddle through. And the reason my books are sort of, you know, they're little... First of all, everything interests me. That's the problem. I just find everything fascinating. And I don't know the ending when I start a book. And sometimes I'm right to the last page, I still don't know what the ending is, because it's a true life mystery. And I will pick something. My rule is, this has got to be a topic that's never been done before. It's got to, you know, be like the first interviews, the first whatever, revealing something new. Like my Bob Crane book in Autofocus was about, you know, got the trial reopened. There'd never been a book about him. You have to start at absolute zero.
Yeah.
So that's the
And you're not afraid to follow any tangent that strikes you.
No, and you know, to be honest with this book, and a lot of times people, you know, I am a little eccentric in what I do, because I love to illustrate my book, although I didn't illustrate this one.
Mm-hmm.
I was like the staccato knife thrust in the shower. I wanted to see if I could sort of recreate that pattern, so I have chapters that could be as much as one page. But anyway, it's absolutely a fascinating story to me, and I have to love the people, and sometimes I'll get up in the morning, I'll start writing. And next thing I know, you know, it's dark out. And next thing I know, David Letterman's on. You know, I just simply love doing this. This is so thrilling because I get to know these people and to know their world.
Well, and I don't want to give anything away from in your book, because it is a mystery, and I think people will enjoy reading it for themselves. But so let me just talk about a tangential topic that struck me. Hitchcock's Psycho was a landmark film in many ways. It was kind of the wrecking ball into the wall of the production code that had ruled Hollywood for decades, and the floodgates of sex and violence were open in that film's then shocking use of violence and blood. And in the years since, films and television and literature and video games and Robert Graysmith's books have, you know, increased the level of violence exponentially. And the question is always, you know, does media violence increase actual violence? And in your story, there is a man who commits murder after seeing Psycho. So,
very good point. Excellent.
You spent so many years studying violent behavior. So, you know, what do you think?
Well, you know, first of all, you got to realize Hitchcock's motive. He was very impish. And he had two things. First of all, he wanted to tweak the censors. He put a toilet in. You know, he has a woman in a shower. He did all these things that were absolutely groundbreaking and really... were part of the sexual revolution and part of the all the adult movies that came later, you know, the a more mature Hollywood. And the other thing he was trying to do was lead this audience down the garden path. And he says this all through the book. I want to tell them something terrible is going to happen. and then it doesn't. I'm going to tell something terrible is going to happen, and then it doesn't. He liked to manage his audience. And, you know, it is a remarkable film. It was shot with a TV crew, shot in black and white, shot in a very short amount of time. And I don't think anybody saw it coming, the amazing success it had.
Well, it's a great movie.
Your other point, what the intriguing thing about this, I always look for things in real life. In fact, this entire book is based on the movie Laura, basically. I mean, that was my jumping off point. But the part about violence and movies, you know, and influence, it was exactly, I think it was 8 miles from where Psycho was being filmed, and an eighth of a mile from where Marley Renfro, the model, who was the body double in the film, lived, was a young man named Sonny, who looked like Tony Perkins. He was the same age, the same height, the same coloring, same narrow, broad shoulders, and he lived with mother. So he goes to see Psycho, and his mother's thrown him out a couple of days earlier. He loves older women, anybody that reminds me of mother. He goes with women in their 50s, 60s, 70s. He loves the older women. So this guy goes to see Psycho. 3 hours later, he's killing women that remind him of mother, and he didn't find a shower curtain, but he wrapped them in sleeping bags. And this goes on through the weekend, and I thought, my God, this is directly attributable to him seeing Psycho, which he was obsessed with.
So, and that's true. I mean, you know, you mentioned Frederick Wertheim for a moment in your book, mm-hmm. and you know, he was obsessed with the idea that juvenile delinquency could be traced to comic books and so forth. And you know, he was probably wrong, but at the same time, he was trying to hold back that floodgate that, you know, of violence and sex, which, as you talk about, I mean, I think that's the main subject, maybe, of your book, that
flooding. Well, I think obsession is, actually, you know, and it takes a lot of guts to write a book like this. I mean, I'm a pretty solitary guy. You probably couldn't find me if you wanted to. I'm here in San Francisco, and I lived for 30 years across from Golden Gate Park, fog rolling in every night, 30 years in a single room, and I produced 30 books.
You have a lot of stuff.
So I've been a busy little beaver illustrating them, and I love doing it. But you have to be a little obsessed, and you simply grab hold, and you never let go. And this was the case with Marley Renfro. Now, first of all, you're talking about Psycho. I didn't just like Psycho. I couldn't wait to see that film. Now, I was living at the age of 17, in a small Air Force, well, it was actually a pretty large Air Force base in Japan, where my parents were Air Force officers, and they weren't showing Psycho. It was a fairly, you know, it was conservative time. This had been 1960. You didn't get Playboy, you didn't get, or certainly not an uncensored Playboy issue, you didn't get movies like Psycho. And I can remember that the base commander had banned it at the time. So I decided, you know, I'm going to college in San Francisco, you know, in Berkeley, Berkeley, Oakland, and I went back. So I'm 17, and I'm at my college, and there's nobody there. I got there too early. I come on an ocean liner, and so I'm going downtown to Oakland, which is where Russ Meyer was making his films, all these groundbreaking, what they call nudie cutie films, and I see that, you know, Psycho's coming, and then I see a magazine, and it's Playboy, for heaven's sake. So it had that cover you spoke about. It is a stunning woman on the cover. I love the warm tones and the just the gracefulness. It was very much like an old master painting, and those missing pieces. And I absolutely wanted to know who this person was. So I pinned it up in my studio where I painted. And all through the year I thought about her. And then at the end of 1960, she vanished. Never saw her again, but she was so striking that I never, ever forgot her. And I was going to wait. It took me 40 years. I said, okay, I'm going to write about this woman. I've got to find out who she is. So I began to look around. I realized it's Marley Renfro. Not only was she the woman on the cover, she was the body double in Psycho that they totally kept a secret. Hitchcock wanted everybody to think it was Janet Leigh. And so, wow. I mean, I just thought, oh, boy, this is going to be great. So I started looking around, and it turns out she's been murdered by a serial killer. And I thought, my God, this is certainly very ironic. And, you know, Playboy said she was dead. There was one magazine said she was the most affecting screen death ever for 10 years. And they were calling her Marley and Myra. And, you know, like, I guess that was, I didn't know her real name. You know, maybe that was her stage name. And she'd been killed in West Los Angeles and gone unsolved all these years. And so, well, great, I can solve this. I can get to know about Marley. And the more I looked in it, you know, 40 years I kept this picture. I still have all of her. She only really was in magazines for about a year. And I kept these pictures. And I became what I thought in my mind, just like the detective in Laura. And if you recall that 1940s Otto Preminger film,
Rita
a detective comes to investigate a woman's death, and he falls in love with her painting on the wall. And halfway through the picture, he discovers she's alive. You know, I mean, I always loved that idea. And so as I'm writing this story of this woman, you know, this gorgeous model who seemed to have had the most amazing year in anybody's life, I begin to wonder, what if she's still alive? What if somebody else had been murdered in her place? And what if I could find her? So that really was the thrust of the book, and I was finished with the book, and I won't give away. I mean, I probably could, actually, but I was so shocked because I'd found out the truth probably maybe less than 24 hours earlier. I had finally tracked down some high school yearbooks and things, and I'd figured it out, and then I got a call that literally almost knocked me off my chair. So that's toward the end of the book. So that's the kind of books I write where I'm as surprised as the reader, you know, and I don't know where this mystery is taking me, but I want to take the ride.
Now I'm going to try to get you back to my question then. And your book is fascinating, a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed traveling through the, you know, I loved hearing about Francis Coppola's film and
there's
some great stories and being in Nevada and all those things. So why didn't you just? So we were just talking about the effect of violence that could. That,
oh yeah.
All right.
Okay.
So why not write this wonderful movie book and not talk about Sonny and that? Isn't that maybe another book?
Well, first of all, I don't really buy that. I think sometimes we live in a very violent world. There are a lot of violent video games. I think in a way it's a great safety release, and I never did agree with Dr. Wortham. I thought his ideas about comic books were pretty much crackpot stuff. I really did.
Yeah.
I collect comics. I deal with a lot of people. I go to all the conventions and stuff. And he's considered really pretty much a jerk, honestly.
Yeah.
He was pretty, well, forget it. I just simply am not a big fan of his. But I don't know that there's that big a correlation. I really don't. I tell you what is a correlation to violence is you didn't have serial killers till modern industrialization.
Right.
There's something about, you know, I found a few back in 1500.
Of course, there's Jack the Ripper.
But in general, that seemed to create Jack the Ripper and you know, this kind of thing.
But, you know,
also,
of course, there's a lot more
too.
Of them there. I mean, if there weren't any serial killers, well, you know, you'd be out of business.
Well, no, that's the thing, though. You know, people love, let's face it, Zodiac has been selling for 25 years. In fact, it's funny, this on the 2nd of February this year, it's been selling for 25 years without stopping.
And it's a great.
I mean, it never
left.
It was
great
in the bookstores, and just never. You know, it's really quite amazing. It's quite an interesting book. Of course, that took me 10 years to write, and the sequel took 15. So I don't exactly bat them out.
No.
But my book now, my new book, for instance, is called Blackfire.
Yeah.
The true biography of the original Tom Sawyer, and in a way, it has a little true crime in it. It's a search for an arsonist who burned down San Francisco 6 times in 18 months. Back in the 1850s, and Mark Twain, and who knew him. I mean, it's fascinating, and I have a book called Melville's Romance, which is about Melville's love affair with Hawthorne, which is I spent years and years on, which is really a beautiful, beautiful story. You know, I do a lot of stuff. I do children's books, do a lot of different things. Although true crime is, you know, what people
I guess
know
that's what you
for.
Know for. Yeah. So, and I guess you've probably just answered my question, but I'm
sorry.
Gonna ask
I am long-winded.
we're talking with Robert Graysmith, and he's written many books, including children's books, and his most recent book in paperback is called The Girl in Alfred Hitchcock's Shower. But did you ever get, you know, like really depressed reading about crime and looking at crime photos?
Yeah. But you know what? You know who I'm really writing about? I'm writing about the policemen. I love those guys.
Yeah.
I know a lot of really, you know, terrific cops. And again, this obsession where they're going to get justice. They really do believe in this stuff. And these guys, just their lives break down. I don't know if you've read my book, The Sleeping Lady, but the cops in that were, oh, my God, they were losing their wives. And in fact, even in the Bob Crane autofocus case, it's amazing the toll it takes on these guys, and they simply are going to go out there and get justice for these people. And, you know, like with the kind of books I write, for instance, let's say autofocus. That case had been closed for 17 years. It was reopened. A trial was held of the suspect. The Sleeping Lady case, which took a long time. I mean, that took hiking on mountains and really quite an interesting story. But they used the book in the governor's race that year, the gubernatorial race, and it was helped bring about the mentally disordered sex offenders law that we all love. You know, these books, I always try to get something that's going to come out of the book.
You mentioned in your book, you mentioned King Vidor and his quest to
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, and I remember the book about that cast of killers.
So, it's a great book.
Did he inspire you that
yes, he did. He inspired me worse than that. You see, you got to realize, I love Hollywood, I love history, and I love true crime.
Uh-huh.
And they're all beginning to blur together because this book I've written, in fact, the Today Show, of all things, I never leave my house, you realize.
Yeah.
The Today Show showed up last week, and they did a five-minute, it's going to run 5 minutes whenever, and it's about this book I've written called David Fincher Detective. David Fincher was the director of the Zodiac film. Turns out, of all the detectives in the case, he was terrific. Some of the things that he did, this is a man who spent 4 years ethically analyzing the case. He wasn't going to put anything on the screen unless he could prove it, tracking down witnesses. It is a terrific story, and you know, like I said, I'd rather have my historical, you know, mysteries published and first. But this one, I think Fincher, this is going to be Fincher's year. I think he's
going to win the Oscar.
Yeah. So I don't know. You know, I was even going to ask you what you thought. It's done. It's been done. I spent 4 years with him, and I'm holding out the tape recorder in front of him. I'm taking pictures. I got, you know, this guy was absolutely fascinating. He's caustic. He's brilliant. He cares, and he. I told him you should be a 14th century landscape painter. He has such an eye, and I love the story. But there again, this was really the one that was inspired by the book you just mentioned, the King Vidor case.
Yeah.
He wanted to solve a mystery in order to make solve the crime in order to make a movie of it, and he was a fantastic detective.
Yeah. Oh, I do think I think his picture is going to win, also Best Picture. In your book, you give a little dedication to James Ellroy, and he has so many great books that are, you know, really give you the atmosphere of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Were you kind of going for that in creating LA?
First of all, I know him. I know so few authors. I knew Kurt Gentry a bit here in San Francisco, and of course, Herb Cain, my office was next to his.
He was great.
A political
we miss him still.
Wonderful man who worked, oh, God, what a cool guy. And so I don't know that many, but I've been out a few times to dinner with James Ellroy. And, you know, he's just a loose cannon and so much fun. And he really knows how to, you know, he's just Hollywood. And I thought, well, I'm doing a Hollywood book, and I love L.A. Confidential. I'm just crazy about that film and the book. And I'm going to have James. I don't even think he knows it was dedicated to him. He's so busy. I sent him a copy, but that guy is working day and night. He does as many as 150 drafts, he tells me. And
really?
I'm pretty much the same thing. By the end of the day, I've rewritten everything, and the next morning, if I don't make a disc of it, it's absurd. But it's just the best fun. I don't know if you do writing, but and then you get to illustrate it, and then you do the bibliography, and it's just fun.
Bibliography,
it's like doing a movie, you know.
Your bibliography is annotated a lot. I mean, you don't just say the name of the book, but you said what you got out of it and where you found it.
And there's some wonderful books out there. I mean, well, let's face it, my favorite books, and I know a lot of people don't really get it, but Moby Dick, which I love. It's a terrific book. It's every single type of literature, all packed into one book.
I saw the movie.
And, no, it's really fabulous. And I got to, I mean, I know every page, every word this guy did and when he did it. But my other book is Day of the Locust, which I just simply never tire of. And
that really has the Hollywood mood.
I think the
mood
best
too.
Hollywood book, yeah. So I don't know what it is. When I'm writing, it's probably since I'm self-taught, but you see it in your head. You know, I have a book called The Laughing Gorilla, which came out in paperback a few months ago. And it has this wonderful opening. It's a guy who's, it's 1930 in San Francisco. You have the most corrupt police force. You have guys who are beat patrolmen. One guy had $856,000 in his checking account. This is 1930. And he's obsessed with this killer who looked like a gorilla, who carried a Bible under his arm, you know, and couldn't quite catch this guy. And, you know, it begins with him thinking about this guy, and his best friend is murdered down at the docks in the middle of an eclipse. The whole city, there's this green light over the city. I can just see this in my head, you know. It'd be such a fabulous, just as a movie, just as enjoyable. And so anyway, and that is another book where if you took out the last four words of the book, you would never know the ending. I love getting like a steamroller. You just get going, and you don't know what's coming, and you're researching as you go, and I always research chronologically, and it's always a big surprise.
There was also, I felt, a little Raymond Chandler, maybe, playback in your...
Yeah, that's not my favorite Chandler, by the way.
No, you know, very few people love that one, but there's a lot of driving around L.A. in that one.
Yeah, and I'm not as good at that, because let's face it, it's James Ellroy's town, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, ask me about San Francisco, I can tell you what ships are buried underneath my house, and, you know, I know every inch of this place. And by the way, I don't know if you spent a lot of time in San Francisco, but you can't leave. I tried to leave San Francisco. I came in, you know, 1960 when I saw Psycho and started college, and I just can't leave. You try, it just calls you back. I think it's the most fabulous place in the world.
And you you started as a cartoonist.
I did. I want to be a painter. I'm hoping I can get some, you know, one more movie so I can get a good studio and do some of these paintings I've been laying out. And but I was so up to now though, you know, I really love the illustrations I did for Blackfire. They're full page illustrations, and they're pen and ink, and they're done in like the old 15th century style with a quote crow quill pen. Very difficult to do because, you know, you make one mistake, you got to start over. I don't make mistakes. And, but that's half the fun. And of course, even in my contract with Random House Berkeley Books, Broadway Books, that they, you know, which how many they're using and what pages. And I like to do the maps because I have no sense of direction. And it's just, I don't know. You think I'd get tired of it after the, you know, all this, but it's just exhilarating. I've been working all day. I just sent off the, you know, I went through, made the edit changes on Blackfire, the biography of the original Tom Sawyer, which, oh my God, really researched, back of anything, too much. And I should be exhausted, but, you know, you called, and you know, I'm still, you can tell, I'm very peppy.
I appreciate that. That's Robert Graysmith, the peppy man on the other end of this line. And his most recent book is The Girl in Alfred Hitchcock's Shower, and of course he's the author of Autofocus and Zodiac. You did a lot of research on this book, and you talked to a lot of people. Did you have fun talking to all these people?
Well, golly, you know, I mean, this is a tough one because, you know, you're always sort of skipping around the ending of this thing.
Right.
But let's think about this for 1 second.
Okay.
Marlee Renfroe is the girl in the shower, uh-huh. And she watched Psycho being made from inside the shower. Never been interviewed. You know, she knows all these things. And you know that of the entire cast of Psycho, cast and crew, I think when I was writing this, there were 5 people left. It's probably 3 now.
Yeah.
She's a national treasure to the things she knows, you know, about this.
Yeah.
I think, you know, and I think the best book, of course, was done, you know, which is the entire film. I'm only writing about 47 seconds of a film.
Right.
I mean, I wrote a book about a few seconds.
That's right.
But it was just groundbreaking. I actually, you know, Hitchcock went out and bought up copies of Psycho so nobody would know the ending. Bought up the paperbacks, bought up the hardbounds.
It's crazy.
And he bid blind. Poor Robert Bloch. He did not know that Hitchcock, he's bidding these paltry little sums that he thought it was somebody, you know, he had somebody else bidding for him. And of course, this film made, oh golly, how many millions? I mean, I've lost track. Was it 16? It's in the book.
Yeah.
16 million the first year or something. It was just phenomenal.
And
it cost
you very little. You mentioned Robert Bloch got screwed in the making of the picture.
Oh yeah. Well, everybody gets screwed. You know, I love Hitchcock. You know, no, seriously, you know who I was thinking about the other day? You know, Anthony Hopkins wants to play Hitchcock. He was talking about, you know, doing a biopic of the whole life, right?
Yeah.
But my God, he mentioned Psycho in his little interview. That's what attracted him. He should do this period. He's the right age and right everything. But the thing about Hitchcock was he's a bit of a lech. I have some stories I don't use. I try to look out for people. There was one of him chasing around this Italian actress, French actress, who was in one of his films, who sit out in the parking lot. I mean, he was crazy about women. You can see on the first page, he's talking to Marlee Renfroe, who is totally nude throughout the you know, the filming. She doesn't wear any. She's a model. That's what she does. And a nudist.
Well, she's wearing a little piece of plastic, right?
Only in the shower.
Other than that, she's just sitting there naked.
Yeah, no, she is. And she's... You know, I don't know if you mentioned, we were just chatting, or I was talking, but did you go through her year? Could I do the year, if you didn't mention that? What she did in 1 year?
Tell us.
Okay.
We know she was in Psycho, and she was also...
Right, okay, yeah. The most famous scene in mystery movie history, mm-hmm. the shower scene. She starred in Francis Ford Coppola's first film, The Peeper, which he really doesn't like to talk about, which was melded with another movie. It's got his name all over it, and he's got his father's name is doing the music. You know, it's fine. I think it's okay. She was on the first Playboy TV shows. She mm-hmm. was a Playboy cover girl. She was one of the very first Playboy bunnies. There's a photo that Hefner runs every once in a while. It seems to be the only one that survived of the Chicago Playboy. And there's all these people, maybe 10 bunnies tops in the scene. And Marley's right behind him. She's just over his right shoulder. And I thought, wow, that's incredible. But it wasn't just that. She dated Lenny Bruce. She went riding stallions along the Malibu Beach with Steve McQueen. She met a gangster, you know, who would come to the Playboy Club. This is in one single year. Can you imagine? I just thought, you know, what a remarkable woman. And to have never anybody write about her is just, it's unbelievable.
Well, I'm glad you did write about her, and it's really a great book, and I highly recommend it to everybody. It's a lot of fun. And there you go. It's a fun book from Robert Graysmith, and it's called The Girl in Alfred Hitchcock's Shower, and the author is Robert Graysmith. Thank you so much for spending some time with
you.
Us. Thank you.
I had a wonderful time. Thank you.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's edition of From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program and that you'll come back and see us again next time. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at KUSP.org or find us on Facebook and iTunes. I want to thank Robert Graysmith for being my guest this week. His latest book is called The Girl in Alfred Hitchcock's Shower. And of course, I want to thank our From the Bookshelf staff, the lovely Miss Breanne Beal, for all of her hard work, everything she does. Thank you, Breanne. Thanks, everybody. I'll see you next time. I'm Gary Shapiro.